Chapter 1. Instead of a Preface. For months now, my friends, you have been urging me to give you a description of my impressions while travelling in foreign lands, never suspecting that you are thereby placing me in a quandary. What shall I tell you? What shall I say that is new, that has not been told before? Who of us Russians, those at least that read periodicals, does not know Europe twice as well as he knows Russia? I have put down twice merely out of politeness. I should probably have said 10 times better. Besides, apart from these general considerations, you are well aware that I, of all people, have nothing to tell, and least of all can I give a methodical account of anything, because there was no method in my sight-seeing, and even when I did see anything, I did not have time to examine it very closely. I visited Berlin, Dresden, Wiesbaden, Baden-Baden, Cologne, Paris, London, Lucerne, Geneva, Genoa, Florence, Milan, Venice, Vienna, and a few other places, to which I went twice. And the whole tour took me precisely 2.5 months. Now, I ask you, is it possible to see anything thoroughly while travelling over so many roads in the course of 2.5 months? You will remember that I composed my itinerary while still in St. Petersburg. I had never been abroad, but I longed to go there even as a small child, when, still unable to read, I listened agape, enthralled and terror-struck in turn, to my parents' bedtime reading of Mrs. Radcliffe's novels, which put me in a fever and kept me awake at night. When at last I wrenched myself away from my preoccupations and went abroad, I was 40 years of age, and, naturally enough, I was not content with seeing as much as possible. I wanted to see everything, yes, everything, despite the time limit. Besides, I was quite incapable of coolly choosing places to visit. Heavens, how much I expected from my tour! It doesn't matter if I don't look at things in great detail, I thought. I shall at least have seen everything and been everywhere, and all I have seen will have fused itself into one whole and made up a kind of general panorama. I shall, at one fell swoop, have had a bird's-eye view of the entire land of holy miracles, like the promised land from the mountain in perspective. In fact, I shall experience a new, wonderful and mighty impression. After all, what do I regret most now, sitting at home and recalling my summertime wanderings? Not that I saw nothing in great detail, but that although I have been almost everywhere, I have not, for example, been in Rome. And in Rome I might, perhaps, have missed the Pope. In fact, I was overwhelmed by an unquenchable thirst for something new, for a constant change of place, for general, synthetic, panoramic, perspective impressions. Now, what do you expect from me after such a confession? What shall I tell you? What shall I depict? A panorama? A perspective? A bird's-eye view of something? But you will probably be the first to tell me that I have flown too high. Besides, I consider myself to be a conscientious man, and I should not at all like to tell lies, or even travellers' tales. But even should I limit myself to depicting and describing the panoramic view, I could not fail to tell lies, and not even because I am a traveller, but simply because in such circumstances as mine it is impossible not to lie. Reason it out for yourselves. Berlin, for instance, made a very sour impression on me, and I stayed only 24 hours in it. But I know now that I have wronged Berlin, that I have no right to my assertion that it makes a sour impression. There is a dash of sweetness in it, at the very least. And what was the cause of that fatal mistake of mine? Simply the fact that, though a sick man, suffering from an attack of liver, I sped along through rain and fog to Berlin for 2 whole days and nights, and when I arrived, after a sleepless journey, yellow, tired and broken, I noticed suddenly, and at the very first glance, that Berlin was incredibly like St. Petersburg. The same monotonously straight streets, the same smells, the same... But I cannot enumerate all the things they have in common. Blow me, I thought to myself. It was really hardly worthwhile spending a back-breaking 48 hours in a railway carriage only to see the replica of what I had just left. I did not even like the lime trees, to preserve which a Berliner will sacrifice all he holds most dear, even his constitution. And what can be dearer to a Berliner than his constitution? Besides, all Berliners, all of them without exception, looked so German that, oh horror, without so much as an attempt to see Kaulbach's frescoes, I slipped away to Dresden as fast as I could, deeply convinced in my heart of hearts that it needed a special knack to get used to a German, and that at first he was very difficult to bear in large masses. In Dresden I was unfair even to German women. I decided immediately I stepped out into the street that no sight was more horrible than a typical Dresden woman, and that even Vsyevolod Krestovsky, that poet of love and the most inveterately gay of all Russian poets, might despair and come to doubt his vocation. Of course, I felt the very same minute that I was talking nonsense, and that under no circumstances whatever could he possibly come to doubt his vocation. A couple of hours later, I realized what it was. Back in my hotel room, I put out my tongue in front of a mirror and had to confess that my opinion of the ladies of Dresden was in the highest degree slanderous. My tongue was yellow and unpleasant. Can it really be true, thought I, that man, that lord of creation, is so dependent on his own liver? How low! With these comforting thoughts, I went off to Cologne. I admit to having expected a lot from the cathedral of which I reverently made drawings in my youth when I studied architecture. On my way back through Cologne a month later, when I saw the cathedral a second time on my return from Paris, I almost asked its forgiveness on my knees for not having fully grasped its beauty, just like Karamzin fell on his knees in front of a Rhine waterfall. But all the same, that first time I did not like the cathedral at all. It seemed to me to be nothing but a piece of lace, lace and lace again, a bit of fancy goods, something like a paperweight, some 500 feet high. Not very majestic, I decided, just as our grandfathers concluded about Pushkin. His writings are too light, they used to say. Not enough of the lofty style in them. I suspect that this first opinion of mine was influenced by two circumstances, the first of them being Eau de Cologne. Jean Maria Farina is situated next to the cathedral, and no matter at which hotel you stay, whatever your mood, however hard you may be trying to hide from your enemies, and particularly from Jean Maria Farina, his clients are sure to find you, and then it is the case of Eau de Cologne ou la vie. One of the two, there is no other choice. I cannot assert too definitely that these are the very words people shout. Eau de Cologne ou la vie. But who knows, perhaps they are. I remember at that time I kept imagining I could hear them. The second circumstance which irritated me and made me unfair in my judgments was the new Cologne Bridge. The bridge is excellent, of course, and the town is justly proud of it, but I thought it was too proud of it. Naturally, this made me angry. Besides, the collector of pennies at the entrance to the marvellous bridge should not have made me pay that reasonable tax with an air of fining me for some misdemeanour of which I myself was not aware. I don't know, but it struck me that the German was trying to bully me. He has probably guessed, I thought, that I am a foreigner and a Russian at that. Anyway, his eyes, almost as good as said, "You see our bridge, you miserable Russian? Well, you are a mere worm in comparison with our bridge, and with every German man, because you haven't got a bridge like that." You must agree this is enough to make one take offence. The German never said it, of course, and never even harboured it in his thoughts, perhaps, but it does not matter. I was so convinced that that was just what he wanted to say that I completely lost my temper. "Damn it all," I thought. "We have something to be proud of, too. The samovar, for instance. We've got magazines. We make first-class things. We have..." In short, I lost my temper, and after buying a bottle of eau de cologne, which I could not avoid, I immediately rushed off to Paris in the hope that the French would be a great deal nicer and more entertaining. Now, you reason it out for yourselves. If only I had made an effort and stayed a week in Berlin instead of one day, the same in Dresden, and say about 3 days or two at the very least in Cologne, I should most probably have had another or even a third glimpse of the same things, but with a different eye, and should have obtained a more favourable impression of them. Even a ray of sunshine, just an ordinary ray of sunshine, would have had a lot to do with it. If only the sun had shone over the cathedral, as it in fact did shine when I arrived in the city of Cologne for the second time, the whole building would have appeared to me in its true light, and not as it did that bleak and even somewhat rainy morning, fit only to provoke an outburst of wounded patriotism. It by no means follows, however, that patriotism is only born in bad weather. And so you see, my friends, you cannot look at everything in 2.5 months and never make a mistake, and I am unable to give you the most accurate information. I must willy-nilly be untruthful occasionally, and therefore... But here you interrupt me. You tell me that this time you do not, in fact, want accurate information, that if need be you will find it in Reichard's guidebook, and that, on the contrary, it would not be at all a bad thing if travellers aimed not so much at absolute truth, which they are almost never able to attain, as at sincerity. If sometimes they were not afraid to reveal some personal impression or adventure, even of the kind that did not redound much to their credit, and if they did not look up well-known authorities in order to check up on their own conclusions. You tell me, in short, that all you want are my own impressions, provided they are sincere. Ah, say I, so what you want is just gossip, light sketches, fleeting personal impressions. That certainly suits me, and I shall immediately consult my diary. And I shall try to be as simple and frank as possible. I only ask you to bear in mind that I shall often be wrong in the things I write about. Not wrong about everything, of course. One cannot be wrong about such facts, for instance, as that the Cathedral of Notre Dame is in Paris, and so is the Bal Mabille. The latter fact in particular has been so thoroughly recorded by all Russians writing about Paris that it is almost impossible to doubt it. Even I shall not perhaps make a mistake about this, though strictly speaking I cannot guarantee even this. Now, for example, they say that it is impossible to go to Rome and not see St. Peter's. But just think, I have been in London but never saw St. Paul's. Honestly, I did not. Never saw St. Paul's Cathedral. True enough, there is quite a difference between St. Peter's and St. Paul's, but all the same, it is somehow hardly decent for a traveller not to have seen it. There's my first adventure for you, which does not redound much to my credit. That is to say, I did in fact see it, perhaps, at a distance of some 500 yards, but I was in a hurry to get to Pentonville, did not bother, and ignored it. But let us be more to the point. And do you know, I did not just travel about and enjoy a bird's-eye view of things. Enjoying a bird's-eye view of things does not mean looking down on them. It is an architectural term, you know. I stayed in Paris for a whole month, less the 8 days I spent in London. And so I shall now write something about Paris for you, because I have, after all, had a much better look at it than I had at St. Paul's Cathedral or at the Ladies of Dresden. Well, here goes.